Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. It is Friday, apparently. Allegedly, it is the 20th of November. This is 2020. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Kelly. Welcome to November 2020.
Yeah, you know, maybe that's why I couldn't believe it, because it was just too many 20s at the same time. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Andrew, you are here today to talk to us about Security Friday, as per tradition. And and so the first thing we have on the slate, interestingly enough, is Facebook and Apple.
Some more Facebook and Apple kind of kerfluffle.
Yeah.
So this story is from Bloomberg News. Apple, I guess, on Thursday sent a letter to several human rights and privacy organizations, including the Electronic Frontier Foundation. I don't know if it was an actual open letter or not. Bloomberg just says Apple's letter reviewed by Bloomberg.
Okay.
But anyway, they were specifically... It sounded like they were, it was more defending its iOS 14 tracking, anti-tracking prevention, which they say they will bring in early 2021. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of criticized Facebook and others a little bit, although Facebook, of course, was specifically mentioned. one of the quotes Bloomberg shared was, not only do they allow the grouping of users into smaller segments, ad segments, they use this detailed data about online browsing activity to target ads, and Facebook executives have made it clear their intent is to collect as much data as possible about us and turn it into a profile that they can monetize. And Facebook ended up responding to that, and They're kind of saying that Apple really isn't all about privacy. They said Apple is using their dominant market position to self-preference their own data collection while making it nearly impossible for their competitors to use the same data. They claim it's about privacy, but it's about profits.
Except it's not, because Apple's not doing anything with my data. I don't know.
I mean,
I feel like I'm missing something really important here, but maybe I'm not. Like, the part that Apple cares about is I bought the thing that runs Safari. They don't care what I do with Safari. Like, that's their business model.
Yeah, and that's the main difference that we always talk about. Like, you know, Apple does collect data. There are some voluntary toggles that we can find in settings, like, hey, if you want to share iCloud analytics, turn this on. Mm-hmm. And they use that data to improve their services for their users.
Right. And they tell you.
They tell you.
Yeah.
And they don't share it with other companies or use it for advertising. Mm-hmm. So it's not really about profit.
It's not, and at any point you can go find a page of plain English words that tells you this is what they're doing with it. So it says, like, here's what we do with the Siri recordings that you send us. Here's what we do with, you know, the dictation that you send us, whatever. Like, they, you know, it's very upfront. If you want to go find it, you can find it. It's very easy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Facebook and Apple. I'm like, I almost feel like if we were doing this with text, right? Like, I feel like there should be, maybe in the show notes or something, there should just be a GIF here of, like, eating popcorn, whichever one you like, whether it's Gus from Psych or it's, you know, Stephen Colbert or Jon Stewart, mm-hmm. or whatever. Like, there should be a popcorn GIF here, because I am interested in all the ways that Facebook can be mad about Apple thwarting their attempts to get all the data about all the people all the time.
Yeah, I think exactly.
I think it's kind of amusing. So we have a piece of news and also sort of a practical tip here. And I'm actually going to talk about this one. And it's an app called Go64, G-O-6-4. The reason it's useful, if it sounds familiar, it's because St. Clair Software put out an app called Go64 that was meant to help you find out if everything was 64-bit apps or not before you upgraded to Catalina. So we've seen these sort of compatibility things out there in the world before. Like if you were converting to an Intel Mac, if you were converting to other things, we've seen, you know, roaring apps and things like that that tell you about what the compatibility is of all the stuff that you have on your computer now because you're looking for a new software upgrade or you're looking for maybe a new machine. And Go64 is now out with a version that will tell you what's compatible with M1 hardware. So you can sort everything by, they call it architecture. So you can sort your apps by architecture. So because there's a lot of things that you could have on your system. It could be a universal app. It could be an Intel app. It could be an, you know, an Apple script that's been compiled into an app. So you just double click on it and it works. There's lots of things out there. So you can find out if it's a universal app or if it's not, and see what you can find out about the stuff that you need if you're going to upgrade your computer. So, like, we've talked about upgrading to Big Sur and what that could look like. And this is helpful, particularly if you're getting an Apple Silicon machine, if you've got your eye on one of those M1 computers, or perhaps FedEx has told you that it is in town, but they don't feel like delivering it to you until Monday. Doesn't that sound specific? Ask me how I know. Then if you're in, you know, if you've got a machine on the horizon, then you can use this to make sure that everything that you've got now is going to make a smooth transition. So we just kind of want to PSA that and make sure that people know that that's out there. And I believe it's free. I'm pretty sure it's free anyway. And you can pick that up from St. Clair Software, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes. So, also today we have, Andrew, another piece of information for people about a thing that they should upgrade because there's security issues.
Yes. So if you use the Google Chrome browser, which I imagine is probably a lot of us, there have been 2 zero-days found in Chrome. And this, I did a link teaser to this just 3 days ago. Mm-hmm. So Google has already sent out an update to patch it. So update Chrome as soon as possible. And But in this case, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, they did see an actual evidence of these 0 days actually being exploited in the wild. Okay. And that's why, you know, it was 3 days ago, there's already a patch, but who knows how many Google Chrome instances are out there that are able to be affected by this.
Yeah.
And so just for a little technical details, one of them was, it's related to a VS JavaScript engine for Chrome, and involves an incorrectly handled security check. Exploitation would most likely require an attacker to direct the victim to a malicious web page, which they can do, you know, by sending you a phishing email. So, you know, sending you an email pretending you'd be from your bank, but then when you click on the link, it takes you to a page that looks like your bank, but it's actually one of these malicious pages.
Yeah, click here for more information or whatever, and then you end up on a page that maybe you shouldn't be on. So definitely check for updates. And the other thing that I've noticed in Google Chrome is if you're signed in, like, you will get updates automatically. Or if you have it set to sync or something like that. But if you don't, it'll start throwing alerts at you. Like, you're not set to automatically update, and you really should. And in this case, yes, you actually really should. So that's what we should do. Thank you for that, Andrew. Yes, please update Google Chrome, because these are bad hacks. Like you said, these are things that are already out in the world that are seeing action. So this isn't one of those theoretical ones that we talk about sometime. Like, you should just know this is out there. This is, like, actual actually happening. So definitely get on that. So right now, what I'd like to do is take a minute and talk to you about our sponsor this week. And our sponsor this week is MacPaw Software. They make an app called Clean My Mac X. And what it does is it helps clean and optimize your Mac. So if perhaps you are not interested in the earlier story about Go64 because you don't have a new Mac coming, this is definitely an app that you can use to make sure that you're getting all the performance out of the Mac that you have that you possibly could. So Clean My Mac X helps you keep an eye on all the apps that you have installed. Maybe you have things that aren't compatible. It can help you, since we're on Security Friday, it will also tell you which apps want to access your camera or your microphone and what those permissions look like. It has something called Smart Scan, which will do a quick malware check. It'll run some optimization tasks and get rid of log files or cached files that you don't necessarily need anymore. That can help make your Mac a little peppier. And it also gives you visibility into all the stuff that your computer's doing. So if you've ever looked at Activity Monitor and tried to figure it out, this is much easier to use. And you can learn more and download it for free at macpod.app/TDO. It's completely compatible with Big Sur, so you shouldn't have any trouble using it there. macpod.app/TDO to get more information and download it for free. macpod.app, macpaws.app/TDO. And we'd like to thank MacPod for sponsoring the show. Now, in practical tip time, this week, we want to talk about encryption. And the first reason we want to talk about encryption is because there's an Android app that can be used for messaging that is not necessarily secure.
Yeah, so Charlotte wrote a link to an article about this from TechCrunch. This is a pretty serious data leak. This Android app is called GoSMS Pro. Mm-hmm. And it has exposed millions of private photos and files. So here's what was going on. Cybersecurity firm TrustRave was one who found this out. Mm-hmm. They discovered this flaw in August. And then they contacted the developer with a 90-day deadline to, hey, maybe you should fix this issue.
Which and is normal, deadline, by the way. Like, when flaws come up, this is a thing that happens a lot of times. Like, we will make it public if we don't hear from you or you don't do anything about this in 3 months. Like, that's a long time to sort it out. Just to put that
in. Yeah, and this is that's standard. It kind of sounds like blackmail, but letting everyone know that there is a serious thing going on and it could affect millions of people. That's really important.
Yeah.
So 90-day deadline. Okay, so the deadline passed. They didn't hear back. And so now they're going public with this. Mm-hmm. So here's what they found. They say, when a GoSMS Pro user sends a photo, video, or other file to someone who doesn't have the app installed, the app will upload the file to its servers and lets the user share a web address by text message so the other person can see the file without installing the app.
Okay.
But they found out that these web addresses are what they call sequential. So that means anytime a file was shared, even between people who did have the app, the web address would be generated anyway. And that means that the sequential addresses are very predictable to guess. And anyone who is able to guess these web addresses could have done some more guessing and cycled through the millions of these web addresses and just find the files.
Yeah, this is this sort of reminds me of the potentially, I'll say, harmless thing where if you know what the default naming scheme is for the files on a digital camera's SD card. So like Sony calls them this, and Nikon calls them this, and Canon calls them that. If you just go web search that file, you'll find people who don't bother to rename their pictures, and you'll just get a random bunch of pictures from folks. And we know they're sequential, and you can just slap a number on the end and see what everybody's 27th or 109th picture was, you know? And so this sort of reminds me of that. Like, if I got one, if I got a web address that ended in a one, I could go take that web address and swap out the one for a two or an eight and see somebody else's allegedly secret stuff, right? So, yeah, that's kind of not great. But there's things you can do to get around something like this where maybe you don't want people to see the files that you're using, and that's use an encrypted chat app.
Yes. So I wrote about five of these a couple years ago. I'll just say this up front. I will update this article because it does sound like all of these apps are still around, but there are maybe one or two more additions.
Yeah.
And so the first app is called Signal. And it's pretty much the gold standard for encrypted messaging apps, because other messaging apps like WhatsApp, for example, they do use their Signal's, I think it's called Whisper protocol, to help them encrypt their messages. So Signal is a very good open source private messaging app. Endorsed by Edward Snowden, so that's another good thing.
Yeah.
Let's see. This next one. So Signal is actually the only one I've used out of these. I just wanted to get all these different apps out here.
Yeah.
The other ones are
iMessage is on the list, which is pretty popular. And I know you use
so
that.
So iMessage is also end-to-end encrypted.
Yeah, it's end-to-end encrypted. One that you may hear a lot about is Telegram, that people like to use. But Telegram is only is not encrypted by default. The point of it is not secure or encrypted messaging, right? It's just messaging, and then you can turn on encryption if you want to, I think, is how that works, right? Telegram.
Yeah. I don't remember anything right now off the top of my head, but I have heard some negative things about Telegram. There were some kind of, like, I don't think their encryption scheme that they're using is open source, so we just
public.
Have to trust Telegram that they're doing it.
Right. Which is part of what makes it kind of iffy. So that's sort of weird. But also, and then, you know, like we talked about, messages is end-to-end encrypted, as long as it's iPhone user to iPhone user. So if you're sending blue messages, then that's solid. But if those messages are green, then you can't say for sure, because the encryption doesn't work if you're sending it to something else. So so if you want messages, sort of, like, there are options out there, but the most common and the one that you're the most likely to get the most, not assistance with, but the most adoption with, I guess, would be Signal, because loads of people use it, and it's very, very secure. So that takes care of messages on your phone, but as far as files go, is there a way to, like, we know about File Vault on macOS, and we know how File Vault works. But what about if you want to make sure that everything on your phone is safe?
Yes. So an app called Cryptomator, which I have recommended before, I use it. I love it. And it lets you manually encrypt your files with Cryptomator. And then it gives you the option, do you want to store it to your local hard drive or an external hard drive or a cloud service? In the iOS app, at least, it gives you the option to store your what they call the vault. So you can store the vault in Google Drive or Dropbox or iCloud, Microsoft's OneDrive. And maybe Google Drive isn't encrypted, but it doesn't matter because your files are encrypted before they are uploaded.
Okay.
So even though, like, you know, we said maybe you can't trust Google with certain things, but as long as you're the one who's doing the encryption, then you can upload them safely to Google Drive.
Yeah, if what you're handing Google is an encrypted file, it doesn't matter whether somebody can get to it or not because it's encrypted. Like, it matters less, I will say. I know that Dropbox has some form of encryption, so if you were to take this file that you encrypted and stash it in Dropbox, then it's encrypted twice. So there's mm-hmm. there's things like that that you can do. And like we always say on the show, it's a matter of awareness. You know, just be aware that this is what's happening. I'm mm-hmm. really curious about Cryptomator because it works in conjunction with the Files app. So it's not like you have to learn a whole new interface or anything like that. And it looks pretty straightforward. So
actually, the news for Cryptomator, why we're mentioning it today, is they did they shared their product development roadmap. Mm-hmm. And it's actually not integrated with the iOS Files app yet, but okay. it will be in the future. So they said, for the past 6 or 7 months, we have been hard at work working on a completely new iOS app written in Swift, which is Apple's programming language.
Yeah.
There was more things with their desktop apps, but specifically with iOS, they said, soon Cryptomator will be fully integrated into the Files app, because that is one that was one of their most requested features.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this comes with benefits like thumbnails, support for third-party apps that can edit files directly inside the vault, and they say many more.
Awesome.
So, good news. Yeah.
So, as we get these features and have more things that we can tell you about Cryptomator, we will probably talk to you about it, because I haven't seen a lot of other file security things for iOS. Like, there's lots of ways that you can encrypt your files on a Mac, but being able to do that with iOS, and particularly the reason this stands out to me is because a lot of people, like you, Andrew, are iPad first or iPad centric. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to put things on my iPad and my iPad is my primary data store, I would like to make sure that that stuff is safe. And so that's part of why I was very interested to see that this news came out. So I'm glad to hear.
Yeah. And Cryptomator is, in my opinion, it's going to be up there with Signal by how good it is. Mm-hmm. I don't think the iOS app is open source, but I'm pretty sure the rest of it is, like on the Mac app, for example.
Yeah.
And I say this because, you know, there are other apps on the App Store that I personally wouldn't trust, like those photo vaults or whatever, where it pretends it's a calculator app. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't use one of those, but Cryptomator, I think, is good.
Yeah. So if you have more questions about that, if you want to find out more about it, if you're using Cryptomator and really love it, if you have something else that's awesome that you're using to encrypt files on iOS that we don't know about, please tell us. You can do that by emailing observations@macobserver.com. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. That's going to do it for us today. So, Andrew, as always, thanks so much for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and have a good weekend, everyone.
I'm always glad when you're here, because we can have these kind of conversations, and I feel it. I like to think we're making the world a tiny bit better by telling people all of these little security tidbits. So you can also let us know if we're making your life a little bit better with our practical tips. We definitely want to know that, too, at all the places I told you about a minute ago. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you again on Monday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other, and let's be careful out there.